If you have been waiting, you can't make your mind up about buying the 10-DVD set Old Time Radio, now's the time. They'll be discontinued as of December 31st. Go to the oldtimeradiodvd.com today and place your order. Prices will never be any lower for this great set of Old Time Radio. oldtimeradiodvd.com.
This is Yesterday's Radio, and I'm your host, Don Astin. Yesterday's Radio takes us back to radio as it used to be. Radio before television. Radio when broadcast drama, mystery, comedy, and adventure came into our living rooms through the radio speakers. When radio was truly the theater of the mind.
Welcome back, everybody. Here we are, Yesterday's Radio. And what's up this time? Well, we're going to do a show that lots of people do. We're going to have two different episodes of Suspense. And why all this? Why two episodes? Well, a few weeks ago, there was the Spurdvac Convention. And I was there, and I was asked if I had some shows, various shows. One in particular was the suspense version of Three Skeleton Key with Vincent Price. So I've done this for a person and sent it to him. But while doing it, I ran across another show that really is good. I'm not doing Three Skeleton Key. I'm going to do The Signalman with Sarah Churchill. And then this is for Walden Hughes, if he ever chooses to listen to this show. Walden Hughes, you know, is also here on Yesterday USA. They did a dramatization of a suspense show that was titled Mission Completed. So we're going to do that, and that stars Jimmy Stewart. Now, these rebroadcasts of Yesterday's Radio are provided by AvPro, and the commercials and announcements will be left intact for historic and nostalgic purposes only. AvPro does not urge the listener to use any product or service on these radio shows from yesterday. Now, I mentioned that we did this, one was a request at Spurdvac, and the other one was a recreation there. Spurdvac was very nice. We had lots of people there, and a lot of stars, and a lot of, it was really lots of fun. And if you weren't there, you would have enjoyed it also. Now, I haven't heard from anybody for a while. No one's emailed me telling me you like the show or you dislike the show. I would like very much for you to send me an email, those of you that would like to. And the address is avprotr@verizon.net. And some of you listeners that have been around for a while say, hey, you changed. Yes, we have. avprotr@verizon.net. Now, I will spell that. A as in Apple, V as in Victor, P as in Paul, R as in Radio, O as in Ocean, T as in Tom, R as in Radio, @verizon.net. And when you do send us an email, we would like to know where you are around the world. Asia, South America, you know, below the equator, Africa, Europe, Near East, Middle East, Far East, wherever. Because we hear from around the world. We'd like to know where you are. And we'd like to know what time of day it is there. You know, morning, noon, or night, whatever, you know. We would like to know the program you're listening to. In this case, you were listening to Yesterday's Radio with Don Astin, the announcer. And then USA, it would be Suspense and so forth. and we would like to know how. On your iPod, on your computer, local FM station, C-band, satellite, whatever. We'd like to know how you're doing it. It helps us in the programming. It really does. And it gives us an idea of where we are going. And we have received messages from the Far East, Japan, Guam, Philippines, Ecuador, Bolivia, nothing from Chile, Africa, on the east coast of Africa, or the west coast of Africa, excuse me, the Mediterranean area, Europe, besides Canada and the United States. And we'd like to know where you are. And when you do send us this email, as I said, we would like to know where you are, where, what time of day it is, what you're listening to, title of the program, and how you are listening. And send that to us at avprotr@verizon.net. And if you have any programs that we're not airing and you would just dearly love to hear them, and you have an idea, gee, you haven't heard them for years or something, let us know what they are, and we will do our best to see what we can do to provide you with a show that you haven't heard in a long time. So send all this stuff to avprotr@verizon.net, and we'll be very, very glad to hear from you. Well, now, let's get on with what we're going to do this time. I usually give a history of the show that we're about to do, and I've done the history of suspense for a long time, but I will just do it again. Suspense. Radio's outstanding theater of thrills premiered on the CBS Radio Network June 17, 1942. And for the next 20 years, Suspense would be on the top, one of the top-rated shows on the air. The series remained a quality program right up to the very last show, number 945, aired September 30, 1962. And if many of you don't know, September 30, 1962 is basically when radio, such as we're talking about now, went away. So here we go. Let's go all the way back to November 4, 1956. And the Charles Dickens story, The Signalman, starring Sarah Churchill.
Suspense. And its producer, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
Good afternoon. We are honored to bring you on this first program in our new Sunday time one of today's most talented actresses, Miss Sarah Churchill, starring in one of yesterday's most chilling tales, The Signalman, by Charles Dickens. More often than not, a classic suffers in transition from one medium to another. The transcribed play you are about to hear is an exception to this generality. The late great writer-director Irving Reese, in his adaptation, has given a dimension to the story that the late, great Charles Dickens never imagined. We suggest that you might find it interesting to read the Dickens story after listening to this, the re-dramatization of The Signalman, starring Miss Sarah Churchill, a tale well calculated to keep you in
suspense.
Smashed by, like a wounded monster screaming in pain, and disappeared into the dark tunnel. In those brief seconds, I'd relived the emotions of my childhood. I still trembled with the child's terror and fascination that had surged through me the many times I stood here, 20 years before. Nothing had changed. The steep, dripping wet walls of jagged stone that led down to the tracks. The gloomy mouth of a tunnel. The small signalman's shack huddled against the side of the cutting. Even the job was held by the same man they had told me in the village. He stood there, in the glow of an angry sunset, furling a signal flag around a short pole. I called to him. Hello! Below! Instead of looking up at me, he turned tensely to stare toward a red signal light that glowed at the mouth of a tunnel. Hello, below there! He finally turned, slowly it seemed to me, even fearfully, and looked up. He stared at me unanswering. I was afraid the suddenness of my call had unnerved him. I tried to compensate by being overly casual. Hello! I would like to speak to you. Is there a path I can use to come down? He stared silently a while longer, then finally pointed his flag to a spot in the cutting embankment. It was a zigzag path with small footholds cut through the clammy stone. A track seemed a mile below, but I was determined to get down. Midway, I sensed a vague vibration of earth and air, like a sound that could be felt but not heard. I tried to fight down a fear that suddenly gripped me. The air was filled with a violent pulsation. It seemed to have a force that could draw me down. I suddenly threw my hands up to my eyes as though to shut out some terrible sight. And then I flattened myself against the jagged rock and clutched hard. Then I was angry with myself, ashamed at this uncontrolled childish reaction. I could see the signalman still staring at me. I climbed down the rest of the way quickly and carelessly, and I walked towards him with a casual smile. He watched me expectantly. Hello. I'm Amy Sayers. I used to live in the village. I was anxious to speak to you. I'm sorry if I startled you when I called out.
Why did you use those words?
Those words? I hardly remember. I think I shouted, hello, below there, or something to that effect.
Not to that effect, miss. Those were the very words. I know them well. Admit those were the words.
All right. I admit.
Why did you use them?
Well, you were below. I wanted to attract your attention, so I called, hello, below there. Seems logical, doesn't it?
Aye, miss. If you had no other reason.
Well, what other reason could I possibly have?
I thought you would tell me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have come down. I think I've frightened you.
Now, why would you think that, miss?
Well, you stare at me as though you had a dread of me.
Sorry, miss. I was doubtful whether I'd seen you before.
Well, if you have, it was when I was 8 years old, standing on that bridge over the tunnel up there. I used to love watching the trains. Well, then my family moved to the city. This is my first visit back in 20 years. You don't believe me.
I'm not certain.
Where could you have seen me?
Don't you know?
Since I've been away for 20 years, I...
Up there, by the red signal light at the mouth of the tunnel.
That's why you turned and stared there when I first called.
Aye, miss.
What would I be doing up at the signal light?
I don't know. I wish I... No, it's a mistake, miss. I haven't been well. What is it you wish to speak to me about?
Well, I'm a writer. I wanted to interview you.
Me? Why, miss?
Well, my magazine does a weekly biographical piece on interesting people and unusual occupations. It's called Close Up.
Yeah, miss. I've read them.
You have?
You seem surprised.
Well, pleased, perhaps.
Well, that one's so unsophisticated as
I really didn't mean that.
Yeah. Well, there's a bit of a fire in my shack. It'd be more comfortable for you there. Won't you come in?
Yes, thank you. My, this is a lonely post. Visitors must be rare.
Aye, miss. The branch superintendent makes an annual inspection. And that's all. Except for...
Yes?
Come in, please.
Oh, how snug and comfortable.
Aye. Most of my waking life is spent here. I've tried to make it pleasant.
And you've succeeded. You were speaking of visitors just as we came in.
I'll put this chair nearer the fireplace. One chills out there.
I say, you have a fine collection of books.
Aye. They've given me much companionship in the long nights.
Pretty weighty companion. Gibbon's Decline and Fall, Burton's Anatomy of Melancholy, Darwin's...
Did I surprise you again, miss?
May I be frank? I'll have to be if I'm to succeed with the article. My editor is only interested in...
Odd?
Well, the unusual.
And the level of my reading seems above the level of my station.
Not many people in any station these days.
Oh, come now, miss. Was you called for frankness?
All right. Why would a man with a mind capable of absorbing these subjects stay on a desolate job like this?
Well, you see, when I was a young man, I became very interested in the natural philosophies. I set my course, I studied hard, planned the future, and then I ran wild, miss. I misused my opportunities. I went down, and I've never risen again. Oh, I've no complaint. I've made my bed. It's too late to make another.
Maybe you gave up too soon.
No, miss, no. There are forces beyond us that shape us. One must know when not to resist, miss. Oh, I might have bloodied myself a while longer, but I knew... I took this position 34 years ago.
And you've never regretted?
Oh, no. Not until...
Until what? Won't you please tell me?
You first tell me what brought you here.
But I have.
Well, you said nothing of what made you think of this place specifically. There are many places and people...
Well, I told you. I used to come here as a child. The trains frightened. Fascinated me. I've always remembered it vividly through the years. I promised myself that one day I would come back and do a story on it. Good subjects aren't easy to find, you know.
Why did you choose just now to come?
These ideas germinate in a writer's mind for a while and then an impulse...
And you were drawn here.
You say that as though mystic forces were involved. It was much simpler, I assure you. I've been working hard. I decided that a few days in the country would do me good. I planned to use them profitably by doing a story on you.
But you might have come to that decision last month or last year.
Well, that's true, but I can't see why you attach such special significance to the fact that I...
Why do they frighten you so?
Wouldn't you think I might outgrow that silly, childish fear? If I was drawn here, as you say, I guess it was to see whether I had. The modern psychiatrist would say it was a desire to relive a childhood experience.
Aye, miss. There are many answers. Philosophers have even speculated on the possibility that the future can intrude on the memory as well as the past.
But surely you don't believe that.
I believe only in the evidence of my five senses.
May I ask, why did you go to the door?
To check the tunnel light.
But does it need to be checked so often? You did before we came in. Why are you staring at me so?
Was I staring at you?
Please, something is preying on your mind. Can't you tell me?
The fire needs stirring.
You're avoiding my question.
There's nothing here, miss. Your coming was a mistake. An old man in a railroad tunnel, it would require considerable imagination to make an interesting story of that.
What exactly are your duties?
Their responsibilities more than actual work, miss. Exactness and watchfulness are required most. Seeing that the signals operate, turning the switching handle now and then, listening to the telegraph ticker to see if the post is wanted. Not much else.
Do the hours weigh heavily through the night?
It's very difficult to impart, miss. Very difficult to speak of. Now, if you ever make another trip, I'll try to tell you.
Yes, of course. And I will have to make several trips before the story takes shape. When may I come again, tomorrow?
Ah, miss, if you wish.
Thank you. I will be back tomorrow evening.
You won't have any difficulty getting back up.
No, it was only that first trip down.
Well, I'll show me white light till you reach the top.
Thank you.
Well, I'll say good night now, miss.
Good night, sir. I wish you a pleasant one.
I regret that I
understand.
Aye, miss, I think you do. May I ask you then, when you get to the top, don't call out to me, I beg of you. Don't call out.
I won't.
And when you come tomorrow night, please don't call out.
Of course not. Good night.
And may I ask one parting question?
Certainly.
When you came down the path earlier tonight, midway, you suddenly threw your hands up to your eyes. Like this, as though to shut out some dreadful sight. Why?
It was that uncontrollable, childish reaction. Like I said, I felt as though the train would draw me down. I covered my eyes like a child not to see it.
You had no feeling that the action was conveyed to you for some reason?
No. Why should it seem otherwise?
Because there's been someone at the red light at the mouth of the tunnel each night for a week now, holding its hands up to its eyes like that, as though to shut out some terrible sight.
And you've actually seen it?
Every night.
Was it there tonight when you went to the door?
Yes, I saw it quite clearly.
Who was it?
You.
Story of Suspense. The Signalman, starring Miss Sarah Churchill. The quiz is as exciting as quiz can be, but what is even more exciting on Strike It Rich is the human interest. For Strike It Rich is the quiz show that gives folks an opportunity to win cash prizes for a worthy cause. And what could be more exciting than that? Get in on the human interest every Monday through Friday when CBS Radio says Strike It Rich on most of these same stations. And now, we continue with The Signalman by Charles Dickens, with Miss Sarah Churchill and Ben Wright, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I returned the next night as the distant clocks were striking nine. The signalman waited for me at the bottom of the cutting with his white light shining. We walked silently to his shack, entered it and sat down by the fire. I didn't wish to press him, so I said nothing. He stared at the burning embers for a moment and then turned to me.
I'm going to tell you, miss, as best I can, what troubles me.
I'm glad.
I mistook you for someone else last night. That troubles me.
The mistake?
The someone else.
Who is it, then?
I don't know.
What does it do?
Well, this time it stands with its left arm across its face. The right arm is waved violently this way. As though to say, for God's sake, clear the way. Clear the way.
You've heard those words?
Oh, I'm not certain, not about those specific words, but I have heard it called before.
When?
Well, one moonlight night about a year ago, I was sitting here when I heard a voice cry, "Hello! Below there!"
That's why you were startled when I used the word.
Aye, miss. Well, I ran to the door and I looked out and I saw this... there's someone else standing up there by the red light near the tunnel, waving its arm as I just showed you. The voice was hoarse with shouting, and it cried, "Hello! Below there! Look out! Look out!" And I caught up my lamp, and I ran toward the figure, calling, "What's wrong? What has happened? Where?"
When I got to the light, it was gone.
Did you see where?
Well, the tunnel was the only place it could go without passing me. Oh, I ran into the tunnel for 100 yards or so, and I searched around with my light. Then I ran back here and I telegraphed both ways. An alarm had been given. Is anything wrong? And the answer came back both ways. All's well.
Of course. Now I'm going to take advantage of last night's permission to be frank. You've been here more than 30 years, haven't you?
Huh?
It isn't the most cheerful place in the world, with that moaning wind through the tunnel and the wild harp it makes of the telegraph wires. It's understandable that you could have the illusion you've heard a call. And anyone staring at the dark long enough as you did from the door could imagine seeing something. You've let it prey on your mind so long, it seems real.
Well, I was not...
I was not finished, miss.
I'm sorry.
Within 6 hours after it first appeared, the main line flyer crashed and derailed at the far end of the tunnel. And within 10 hours, the dead and the wounded were being brought through the tunnel over to the spot where the figure stood.
A coincidence. A tragic, remarkable coincidence. But don't you see...
There is more, miss.
Please forgive me.
6 or 7 months passed, and I'd recovered from the surprise and shock when... one morning, just as daylight was breaking, I looked toward the red light,
and I saw it again.
Did it cry out?
No, it was silent.
It didn't wave its arm?
No, miss, no. It leaned against the post with both hands covering the eyes like this, as though to blot out some terrible sight.
That's why you asked me why I had put my hands to my eyes as I came down the path.
Aye, miss, you called out the words it used the first time, and you covered your eyes as it did the second time.
Go on, please.
Well, that very day, as a train came out of the tunnel, I noticed a confusion of hands and heads at one of the coach platforms. And something waved. I saw it in time to flag down the engineer. He applied his brakes, but the train drifted past here, about 100 yards. As I ran up to it, I heard terrible screams and cries. A beautiful young woman had fallen between the cars, and she was brought in here. She died on this very spot between us.
How horrible. But I still don't see...
One final word, miss, and you'll judge how my mind is troubled. It came back a week ago. And ever since, it's been there.
At the light?
Aye. It covers its eyes. It waves its arm. It shouts, "For God's sake, clear the way! Clear the way!" I've no rest or peace for it. It caused me many minutes together in an agonized manner. Below there, look out, look out! It stands waving at me.
It sounds the telegraph ticker.
Did it sound the ticker last night while I was here?
Twice.
I assure you it was your imagination. The ticker did not sound last night.
No, I've never made a mistake as to that, miss. I don't wonder that you failed to hear it, but I heard it.
Do you hear it now?
Aye.
What is it saying?
It isn't clear. It only warns. It doesn't say against what. If I only knew what it meant. What is the danger? Where is the danger? There is danger overhanging somewhere on the line. Some terrible calamity will happen.
Please, you mustn't let yourself go.
But if I telegraph danger on either side of me or on both, I can give them no reason for it. I'd get into trouble and do no good. They'd think I was mad. And this is the way it would work, miss. Message, danger, take care. Answer. What danger? Where? Message. Don't know, but for God's sake, take care. They'd displace me.
What else could they do, miss?
For your sanity's sake, and for the sake of the lives that are dependent on you, you must listen to me.
When it
first stood under the danger light, why didn't it tell me where the accident was to happen if it must happen? Why didn't it tell me how it could be averted if it could have been averted? And when on its second coming it hid its face, why didn't it tell me instead she's going to die? Let them keep her at home. If it came on those two occasions only to show me that its warnings were true and so prepare me for the third, why not warn me plainly now? And I, Lord help me, a mere signalman on this solitary station, why not go to somebody with credit to be believed and power to act? Why? Why?
I can help you, but you must face realistically what I have to say. Will you try?
I'll try, miss.
These accidents have shaken you deeply. You feel guilt about them, even though there was nothing you could do. You've let it prey on your mind until you imagine someone tried to warn you.
I saw and heard that someone...
Even the senses can deceive when the mind is under stress. Men dying of thirst on the desert. Imagine lakes and hear running streams.
Oh, miss, the bodies of the dead were real enough.
I'm speaking of what you imagined after the accident. If you let me, I'll prove to you, step by step, that the specter existed only in your fantasies.
Well, how can you prove that in the face of what I've just told you?
By appealing to the intelligent, reasoning portion of your mind. Listen, you were positive when you first saw me that I was the specter that you saw at the light, weren't you?
You used the same words.
Well, now listen carefully. I appeal to the intelligent, well-read, reasonable man. Three words. Hello below there. I was more than 100 feet away at the top of the embankment, and you were here below with darkness falling. And three words made you positive you had seen me before. Can't you see you were trying to fit something to what you already believed?
But then you put your hands to your eyes.
Further proof. You have allowed yourself to believe some disaster is about to befall. When I covered my eyes because of a childish fear... You fitted that to what you already believe.
Oh, no, the telegraph took it.
You must hear me out. Would you at any other time, or would anyone at any time, believe that a telegraph ticker could sound in a room this small and be heard by one person and not the other?
But I told you.
Now, the most important proof. You said that when you went to the door last night, it was there by the red danger light.
Aye, it was.
Will you come to the door with me now and tell me if it is still there? Well, do you see it?
No. No, miss. It's not there.
And now I'm going to prove to you that it never was there. I studied the light from the top of the hill before I came down tonight. The post is at least 7 feet high. The light is shielded with a hood. Even if a person stood directly under it or in front of it, they would be in complete shadow, in darkness. You couldn't see that person from this door, and you couldn't see that person if you walked within a few yards of her or him or it. I'm going to walk up the incline now to the light and prove it to you. I walked up the inclining tracks toward the red light at the mouth of the tunnel. Chill, dank wind had an edge like a cold knife. When I got to the light post, I stood directly under it. No portion of the red glow reached me. I was lost, completely in the dark. I saw the sickle man silhouetted in the yellow light of the doorway. Hello? Can you see me? Hello below there? Can you see me?
No.
Good. Now start walking toward me. And tell me when you can see me. He stepped between the rails of the northbound track, on a line with the red signal light, and walked toward me. Suddenly the icy hand of my childhood dread gripped me. There was a vague vibration of the earth and air. Far behind him, coming up the grade fast, I could begin to see the glow of the locomotive's light. Look out! Look out! For God's sake, clear the way! Clear the way! He walked as though in a spell. He didn't hear me, or he wouldn't hear me. I was rooted to the gravel. I threw my left arm up to my eyes and waved my right arm frantically. Below there! Look out! Look out! Clear the way! Oh, God! Please! Clear the way! after it was over, they found me, still standing there, both of my hands up to my eyes, to shut out the terrible sight.
Sarah Churchill starred in Irving Reese's adaptation of Charles Dickens' story, The Signalman. Wait. Wait a moment for a final and important word from Miss Churchill. Listen. Listen again next Sunday afternoon when radio's outstanding theater of thrills brings you Vincent Price in Three Skeleton Key, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense is produced, directed, and taped in Hollywood by William N. Robeson. Mr. Ben Wright supported Miss Churchill as the signalman. The orchestra was conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Sound effects by Ray Kemper and Gus Bays, with Doc Bennett at the microphone controls. And here once more is today's star of Suspense, Miss Churchill.
Thank you. It has been a pleasure to be a guest of Suspense, as it is always a pleasure for me to be a guest in your country. I do hope you will permit me a word to you, my hosts. One of the greatest privileges we English-speaking peoples enjoy is the franchise. From that distant day when the barons wrested the Magna Carta from King John at Runnymede to the day after tomorrow, we have cherished and fought for and even died for the right to vote. So please exercise your vote on Tuesday. Vote as you think, but vote.
Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS News, to be followed over most of these same stations by Indictment.
That was, of course, Suspense. Originally broadcast on November 4, 1956. The Signalman, starring Sarah Churchill. And as you heard at the end, next week would be Three Skeleton Key with Vincent Price. I'm not going to do that now, but we will do that later at another broadcast. And as I said, if that disappoints some of you, let me know. AVPROTR at Verizon.net. And we'll see what we can do. Suspense. Suspense, of course, was one of the great radio shows of all time. And it broadcast created and broadcast stories such as you've just heard by famous authors. Some were scary, some were not, some were all kinds of things, but they did generally keep you in suspense. Some of you may not know that the radio's outstanding theater of thrills came to CBS Radio Network as a test program July 22nd, 1940. This was 2 years before it would actually become a regular program, a regular series for CBS. That very first program was forecast number 4. It was titled The Lodger, and it was directed by Alfred Hitchcock, and it starred Herbert Marshall and Noreen Gamill. The original Suspense broadcast was July 22, 1940, forecast number 4, The Lodger, directed by Alfred Hitchcock and starring Herbert Marshall and Noreen Gamel. And as I said, it would be 2 years later, June 17, 1942, when it became a regular program on CBS, and the first program at that time was The Burning Court with Charles Ruggles and Julia Hayden. So here we go with the next suspense from this for this broadcast. This was done at Spurdvac 2 weeks ago. When I say 2 weeks ago, it was the first weekend of May 2008, and it was the favorite program, suspense program, of Walden Hughes. And Walden Hughes, I think, is also on Yesterday USA doing a few things here with us. So, for you, Walden, here it is. Suspense. Mission completed. Originally broadcast on December 1, 1949, starring James Stewart.
Dealers present Mr. James Stewart in Mission Completed, a suspense play produced and edited by William Spear.
A-L-R-S-P. A-L-R-S-P.
Hey, I'm the Autolite Resistor Spark Plug Salesman here.
I know, Arlo, but I'd like to get in a plug for the plugs, too.
Well, let's have it again.
Sure. A-L-R-S-P.
Yes, A-L-R-S-P. Autolite Resistor Spark Plugs. And only Autolite resistor spark plugs have that exclusive built-in 10,000-ohm Autolite resistor. That means 200% longer electrode life, less spark plug interference with radio and television. Why, with wide-gap Autolite resistor spark plugs, your engine idles smoother, runs better on leaner gas mixtures, actually saves you gas. So, friends, see your Autolite spark plug dealer and have him install a set of the new sensational Autolite resistor spark plugs in your car. Remember, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, with the performance of James Stewart in Mission Completed, a special Pearl Harbor anniversary drama, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
Are you all right for the night, Tom?
How do you know when he's all right?
Tom and I have a secret code, don't we, Tom? He blinks once for yes and twice for no. Are you okay, Tom? Night.
Okay, sure, I'm okay. I've been okay ever since I got liberated from Sagamo Prison in Tokyo in 1945. Yeah, ever since I woke up in this veterans' hospital 4 years ago, I've been okay. I got nothing to do but lie flat on my back and let my eyes wander over the ceiling and look at Suki smiling down at me. Suki seems to smile down at me from the little plaster square of ceiling that reminds me of the prison yard in Sagamo. He can't help smiling and laughing because he knows I can't get at him. Suki knows I'm paralyzed. He knows I can only blink my eyes once for yes and twice for no. You see, Suki was in charge of the camp at Sagamo. And he helped slaughter guys like Campbell and Jones, Mayberry, Evans, too many more to count. First he starved them until they couldn't crawl, and then anyway, just before we got liberated, I fuzzed up in my mind and I couldn't remember anything. Sometime later, I woke up in a vet's hospital, California, USA. And I've been on my back for 4 years staring at that little square. Well, once in a while, they dump me in a wheelchair and push me out into the sunshine and wheel me up and down the walk like I was a baby. Only babies can cry.
Which road today, Tom? Do we go down the walk through the grounds or the sidewalk down by the florist shop? Just open your eyes wide if it's a sidewalk. Well, good. You'll see all the flowers. Oh, here comes Janet wheeling Murdoch.
Remember him?
Hello, Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Janet. How you doing?
Getting in shape for the dance tonight. Am I really?
Hiya, Tom.
I'll see you there. Hi. Isn't Janet a pretty girl? I'll bet you have a nice girl someplace. Come on now, haven't you? We're almost at the flower shop, Tom. Oh, see that man in the window? Isn't that a pretty bouquet he's getting together? Well, look how tan he is. Oh, this is a chap.
I'm sitting in a wheelchair, paralyzed, looking at a man on a flower shop window, and the man I'm looking at is Suki. Fingers that I haven't worked for 4 years are grabbing the arms of the wheelchair, and my legs are straining and pushing against the floor. The same legs I haven't used for 48 months, and I want to cry out, and I feel my tongue getting ready to...
Tom! Tom, what's the matter with you? Come on, Tom, now, relax. Maybe you don't like flowers. Ha ha. That's just like a man. Doesn't like flowers. Do you want to go home now, Tom?
It's Suki. A man in the flower shop window, and it's Suki. I know it is. If we can get closer, all I have to do is look at that scar down the side of his face. I gave him that scar in Sagamo.
Do you want to go home, Tom? Now, don't frown like that. Tom, what's the matter? Do you want to go closer? Okay, if you want to go closer to the flower shop.
It was Suki, all right. Yeah, it was Suki. We got real close to the shop and I got a good look. The scar on his face stood out like a half moon. He was busy with flowers. Flowers? I couldn't imagine him working with flowers. But it was Suki. And this time I didn't clench my fingers or strain my legs. I just lay back in the chair and relaxed. And I began to plan. I began a plan that I'd started the day I looked around and I found myself in a Jap prison camp. A plan that only worked the day Suki got that scar. It didn't work that day. It's gonna work now.
I'll leave you here by the door a minute, Tom. And we'll put you to bed. All right, Tom. Tom, how did you get moved over there? Didn't I leave you right here by the door? Tom, did you wheel yourself over there? Oh, ho, so that's it. Somebody came in here and gave you a push. One day you'll be pushing that chair around like mad, Tom. Just you wait, just you wait. All right, now, we'll get ready for bed.
You ready for me?
Just about. Would you bring Dr. Benson here?
Okay.
Can't imagine who just walked in here and gave you a shove. Wouldn't it be funny if you did it yourself? Didn't know it.
You sent for me, Miss Rhodes.
He must have used his hands. He wheeled himself across the room.
How are you tonight, Tom? And I think that sunshine is doing you some good. Tom, did you move yourself across the room? And if you did, blink your eyes once. And if you didn't, blink them twice. No, you didn't do it, huh? That's all. Thank you, Tom.
I got myself in a jam already. It's funny how I grabbed those wheels instinctively. I guess I gave myself a shove. No, I'm in bed. I'm looking up at that little square. The hospital's quiet, except for Murdoch, who you can always hear mumbling someplace far off. So then I'm turning over on my face in bed, moving muscles I haven't moved for 4 long years. And in a moment, I was sitting up. I was trying to light my own cigarette. But then I got so exhausted, I decided to wait till the next night. And it was the same thing over again. Night after night, I practiced at being alive. 10 days later, I got out of bed and I stood up. And 2 weeks later, I was so strong that I walked around the room 10 times. I never felt better in my life.
That night I nearly got caught. I was sitting in my chair, smoking a cigarette. I scrambled into bed.
Sleep, Tom? Well, you've been having visitors, Tom. The air's full of smoke. Tom, are you asleep?
Oh, yeah, that's a close one. Well, nothing ever came of it, though, but I was more careful after that. A week went by. Every day brought me closer and closer to Suki. And Suki closer and closer to some of his own medicine right back in his face. And then something happened that spoiled everything.
Tom, we've got good news for you this morning.
Look how wide his eyes are. You better not keep him waiting.
Tom, you're getting out of here. We're moving you to within 20 miles of your old hometown. You're going to Colville Hospital.
Better tell him when.
Yes. Tomorrow morning.
He doesn't seem to like it. Tom, what's the matter?
Suki was laughing now. He stood in that little square in the ceiling. He laughed down at me because he knew I was going away and I'd never get him. So they were shipping me out on Sunday. Yeah. And tomorrow was Sunday. And then I had a plan. I had a desperate plan. It might work, it might not. But if it did, it would bring Suki right into my room. You see, the plan wouldn't work except today was Saturday. Today was Saturday. And right the day before they were shipping me to Colville, 3,000 miles away. Today, yeah, today was Saturday. And on Saturday...
This is your last spin around the grounds, Tom. And here comes Jackie. I'll bet you forgot this was Saturday and Jackie's out of school. And he's going to play Mr. Wheelchair Conductor. Hello, Jackie. Ready to take over?
Sure thing, Miss Rose.
I get him lots of sun and keep him up full time. Then when you're through, you can help Janet with Murdoch.
Yes, Miss Rhodes.
I'll see you later. You be careful.
You bet.
All right, kid, you can stop.
What? Did you say something?
I said stop right here.
Gosh, I didn't know you could talk, mister. Well, sure, I'll stop right here, but maybe I'd better get an orderly.
Stay right here and shut up. Now, you listen to me. You and I are going to have a little secret. Are you with me?
What kind of a secret?
You just don't say anything about what you see or hear until tomorrow. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to help a soldier or are you going to spill everything?
What? Why? Well, I'll help, of course.
All right, now. Now, keep pushing me until we get down to that tavern. Then push me in that little alcove there. Come on, come on, come on. What are we waiting for? Hurry up.
Yeah, mister. Yeah, but I shouldn't be doing this, should I?
That's the best thing you ever did. Go into that tavern and get me $3 worth of quarters. Here's $3. I'm going to use this phone. And don't get any funny ideas about calling the hospital. You're working with me, aren't you, kid?
I guess so.
All right, now. I'm going to watch you through the glass of this phone booth. Stay right out there where I can see you. Get me?
Yes, sir.
All right. All right, here goes.
You shouldn't get up. Hey, don't try to get up of your wheelchair.
I'm already out. All right, now stand right there. Stand where I can see you. It's a long distance. One.
Long distance.
I want to talk to Bill Mason at Mason's Real Estate Office in San Bernardino.
What is your name, please?
My name's Tom Warner.
That'll be $1.25 for 3 minutes.
$1?
Please deposit $1.25 for 3 minutes.
$1.25.
Here is your party.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, who's this?
Tom. Tom Warner.
Oh, you're kidding. Who is this?
It's Tom. It's Tom, you dope.
What's the matter? Just can't get it through my thick head, that's all. Last time I heard about
you... I know, but it's all over now. I'm alive. Now, Bill, listen to me.
Now listen close. That's an awful close, Bill. Bill, Suki's alive.
Suki?
Yeah, Suki. He's working in a flower shop in the hospital here.
Are you crazy?
Now, no, I've seen him. I've watched him. I've noticed all his gestures. Yeah, he's got that scar I gave him right on the side of his face. Hey, are you listening?
Yeah, go on.
Now, I want you to get a hold of Curly. And tonight, the three of us will blast him right out of the face of the earth.
Tom, are you okay?
What's the matter with you? I found Suki. He's here right in the United States where we can get at him.
Well, if you're sure it's Suki, why don't you call the cops or the FBI?
Because I know what'll happen to him then. He'll end up in American jail and he'll have a nice soft bed to sleep in. He'll get three good hot meals a day. And he'll get all the comforts of home. Look what he gave to us. Not in your life, Bill. Now, look, if you start driving right now, you can be here by 9 o'clock.
Tom, the war's over. I forgot all that stuff a long time ago. I want you to forget it, too.
Sure, and you can forget it all if you want to. I know why you're forgetting it. It's because you're a chicken, that's why. You haven't got the guts to face him, and your lousy yell on your backbone has turned to a sponge. I only wish Mayberry and Evans were all here to listen to the lousy rot that was dripping out of you.
Tom, what's the matter?
I'm blacking out.
Oh, hang on, Tom, hang on. What place are you calling from, Tom? Tom.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Autolite is bringing you Mr. James Stewart in Mission Completed. Tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Wilcox, I'm from the SALRSPS, Sell Autolite Resistor Spark Plug Society.
Oh, yes, I'm a charter member, and since I've been on the job, millions and millions of Autolite Resistor Spark Plugs have been sold.
Sure, we know, and that's why we decided to award you the Velvet Hammer.
The Velvet Hammer?
Yes, it's for nailing down sales with subtle finesse.
Don't need one. Autolite Resistor Spark Plugs are so good they sell themselves. Why, those worthy wizards of cars, Autolite Resistor Spark Plugs mean faster starts at low temperatures. With that exclusive built-in 10,000-ohm Autolite Resistor Spark Plugs let your engine idle smoother, run better on leaner gas mixtures, save you gas. And friends, Autolite Resistor Spark Plugs have 200% longer electrode life. Cut down on spark plug interference with radio and television. So stop at your neighborhood Autolite dealers and have him install a set of the wide-gap Autolite resistor spark plugs or the famous regular-type Autolite spark plug, long recognized for dependability. Remember, either way, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage our star, James Stewart, in Mission Completed, a tale well-calculated to keep you in suspense.
Tom, can you hear me?
Help me, kid.
Gee,
Tom.
You shouldn't have got off, mister. There, why, brace the chair just like that. There.
Yeah, I'll be all right. Maybe I need a little air.
Gee, you look as white as a sheet.
I don't say anything about this, kid. Just keep your mouth shut until tomorrow, will you? Tomorrow morning, I'll be going away. You promise me that?
Well, okay.
Okay, now, take me home, huh?
Yes, sir.
I was back in my room, flattened out like a pancake. And the bed in the room kept spinning around, wouldn't stay still. Pretty soon I got a sort of a second wind. I decided to try to get up out of bed. I found I could get up okay. I was awful weak. I'd just about given up my plan when I happened to look out the window. The day watchman was changing places with the night patrolman, and the item that caught my eye was a big, fat revolver bulging at the man's side. Maybe my plan would work after all. I didn't need Bill Mason and Curly and anybody else. All I needed was my two hands, a little luck. See, I'd have to make another phone call. Well, there's a phone on this floor right in front of Murdoch's door.
Quiet, Tom. that number.
Flower shop.
Hello. This is Dr. Benson.
Oh, yes, doctor.
Would you send a bouquet of flowers? Roses. A lot of big roses, up to 411. One of the patients is leaving, and we like to make him feel good. It's kind of a surprise just before he goes to sleep, and the ward's quiet. You see, about 9 o'clock this evening.
Okie dokie. You want some fern to go with it?
Yeah, I think that'd be nice. Just a minute. Who delivers at that hour? Have you got someone?
Oh, I deliver myself, just before I close up. Okie dokie.
Fine, thank you. I just got the phone back on the hook when Dr. Benson and two nurses came walking along. Like a shot, I dropped to the floor of the phone booth, and I tried to double up like an accordion. My heart beat so loudly, I was afraid they'd hear it. But drowning out my heart was Murdoch saying something.
Hey, Tom's on the phone.
Don't be silly, Sandy.
Yeah?
Go back to sleep.
Yeah.
I held my breath. But they kept on walking down the hall. And they turned into the solarium. I got up. I got the door open. I almost fell across the hall into my room. I lay back on the bed, gasping and waiting for my pulse to get back to normal. It was 8 o'clock, getting dark outside. The only sound was the clock ticking in the hall. I was getting all the breaks. A summer shower had just come up, light wind blowing. I got down the hall all right and through the solarium to the fire escape. It was easy going down, hugging the shadows. Pretty soon I was at the bottom. I spotted the patrolman sitting under the little eaves of the tool shed he's trying to keep out of the rain. My hand closed around a broken brick that had fallen off the building. I crept up in back of him. I got the brick ready to smash him on the head when I suddenly realized he was asleep. I took a step real close. And I had his revolver, and I was pointing it right into his eyes, which were still blinking off some sleep, and he muttered, and then he started to yell. One little whisper, and this goes off right in your face. Now get up and get into that tool shed. Sure. Open the door and crawl in. Come on, quick. All right, now take this adhesive tape. Tie your feet together. Come on, hurry up. Tight, hurry.
What are you trying to do, fella?
Shut up. Do as I say. Tie his feet together with an adhesive tape and lie flat in his face while I wound long strips of tape around his wrist.
Take it easy.
I tied his wrist together and then I hogtied his wrist to his feet and pulled them up tight behind him. Then I turned him over in his side and I crammed two handkerchiefs into his mouth. Put long strips of tape around those. The rain was coming down in buckets as it made my way back to the fire escape. I made the first two flights. Finally hit four, and I slid on my face out cold. I don't know how long I lay there on those iron bars of the fire escape. It was too long for my plans. Now, there was nobody in the hall, so I ran for it. Still nobody in the hall. Still nobody. Nobody in my room. I slid open the door and I started for bed. The bed met me halfway and I lay there soaking wet with a gun sticking out of my pocket. I spun the cylinder. I saw 6.45 caliber bullets. It was 15 minutes went by. And then it was 9 o'clock and the ward was very quiet. You could have heard a pin drop. Nothing sounded until I heard the sound of the elevator. And it's stopping on four. Someone had got out of the elevator and was padding down the hall. And it was the same little shuffle I'd heard every day for 3 years in a bug-infested hellhole called a prison camp. Yeah,
The same footsteps, the footsteps I used to turn my brain to water and send my heart right down to my shoes. The footsteps that meant someone was going to get it. And I wanted to yell and scream, "Come on, Suki, it's different now. Come on, Suki, I'm waiting for you." I couldn't breathe very good. Every breath I took drowned out Suki's feet. So I just took a little short breath and I waited. And I had to grab the revolver with both hands to keep it steady. And Suki was getting closer. And so I released the safety catch and I tried to keep my wobbly hand steady. He was almost here now. The knob was turning in the door.
You killed Suki in your mind. He's dead in your mind. You can forget him now, Tom.
Yeah, I think I better sit down.
Miss Rhodes, shove that wheelchair out of the room. You can sit in the chair, Tom, but not in a wheelchair. You're through with that for good.
What?
Now, Jimmy.
What's that?
Are you all right?
Yes, Doctor.
No powder burns?
No, I'm fine, Doctor.
Good, good. Now, Tom, I want you to meet Jimmy Cato, who works in our flower shop here, and who was Lieutenant Cato of the armed forces in Italy not so long ago.
Yeah, I killed Suki. I killed
yes,
Suki.
Yes, yes, in your mind you killed Suki, Tom, and you're okay now. But the man you thought was Suki was Jimmy Cato. He was born and raised here in this community, and he has almost as many medals as you have. Now, I want you to shake hands with him.
I'm paralyzed. All I can do is blink my eyes.
No, you are not, Tom. You are going to shake hands with Jimmy and thank him.
Oh, Cato, I'm sorry.
Oh, nothing to be sorry about. When Dr. Benson told me about your reaction the day you saw me, I was glad to help out.
You see, Tom, we're pretty thorough here. When you thought you saw Suki, Miss Rhodes made a notation that you flexed muscles you hadn't commanded for nearly 4 years. And so we went from there.
Well, you must have thick skin, Cato. I'm pretty good shot.
No. The patrolmen on the grounds here, Tom, always carry blanks, no bullets. You're going home tomorrow, Tom. Well on the way to complete recovery. And in your mind, there's a big X mark, canceling out a nightmare of 4 years' duration. And written in huge letters is a beautiful sign, Tom. And it says to you, once and for all, mission completed.
Suspense, presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, James Stewart.
Oh, Mr. Wilcox.
Well, Gracie Allen, what are you doing here?
Well, I came to ask you and Jimmy Stewart if you can fix it with Autolite for my husband, Sugar Throat Burns, to sing on Suspense. Our sponsor will hear it and realize how great George is, and then he'll let him sing on our show Wednesday night.
Well, look, Gracie, Suspense is all booked up for next week. Mickey Rooney will be on.
Well, how about the week after that, Mr. Stewart?
No, they're booked up for that week, too. Lana Turner will be here that week. As a matter of fact, they're booked up for the next 4,000 weeks.
Oh, 4,000 weeks would be about...
That's 80 years.
Oh, how about the week after that?
Well, I've got to leave, Gracie. Tell George that he has all my condolences.
Oh, really? I'm surprised they fit him. You know, you're so tall.
Gracie, would you mind if I get in just one teensy-weensy word about Autolite resistor spark plugs?
Teensy-weensy? Oh, you can do better than that. If George were here, I bet he could sing about your spark. plugs.
I'll bet he could at that. Everyone is singing the praises of Autolite resistor spark plugs. And that goes for the 400 other products made by Autolite for cars, trucks, planes, and boats in 28 plants coast to coast.
Those are nice lyrics.
Autolite also builds complete electrical systems for many makes of America's finest cars, batteries, spark plugs, generators, coils, distributors, starting motors, bullseye sealed beam headlights. All engineered to fit together perfectly, work together perfectly, because they're a perfect team.
You wouldn't want George to sing that?
No. Friends, don't accept electrical parts supposed to be as good. Ask for and insist on Autolite original factory parts at your neighborhood service station, car dealer, garage, or repair shop. Remember, you're always right with Autolite.
You sure, Mr. Wilcox, that you wouldn't want George to sing that?
I'm sure.
Oh. Well, good night, and happy Autolite.
Next Thursday for Suspense, Mickey Rooney will be our star. The play is called For Love or Murder, and it is, as we say,
a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Tonight's Suspense play was produced and edited by William Spear and directed by Norman MacDonald. Music for Suspense is composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Bluskin. Mission Completed is an original radio play by John R. Forrest. James Stewart can currently be seen starred in the title role of the MGM picture The Stratton Story.
You can buy Autolite resistor or regular spark plugs, Autolite stay-full batteries, Autolite electrical parts at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Suspense. Mission Completed, starring Jimmy Stewart. Originally broadcast on December 1, 1949. Now, without any more from me, let's get on with Chandu, the Magician. Chapter 43 of The Search for Robert Regent, as it was broadcast on August 26, 1948.
Chandu, the Magician. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The makers of White King granulated soap present for your enjoyment Chandu, the Magician. But before our play begins, may we make a practical suggestion to you on how to economize on your family clothes budget? That is, buy washable garments whenever you can. Then launder them gently, safely, in White King soap suds. Yes, it is very easy and inexpensive to keep your washables new-looking in gentle White King soap suds. Those suds are safe for all your brightly colored washables. Safe for gay new cottons, pretty rayons, and sheer fine nylons. White King suds safeguard your clothes in still another way. They wash out all the dirt. In fact, the only thing White King suds could possibly be hard on is dirt. They wash out surface soil, wash out hidden dirt. To safeguard all your washables, we know you'll say, as thousands of ladies do, I love White King. While Frank Chandler is away, Princess Nachi leaves her Cairo home with Abdallah, the young Bedouin chief, on an unexplained errand. An occult message from the yogi saying that Naji is in grave danger brings Chandler back from a meeting of the Inner Council at Malta. In his disguise as Fuad the Sorcerer, in the employ of the malignant Roxor, he goes to Roxor's rooms, where he believes Naji may have been taken. Chandler leads Roxor on to boast of his dream to rule the world, and Roxor admits he has Naji hidden somewhere, that she will be sent to join Robert Regent in the ruin near Algiers. Chandu, the Magician.
But
But where is it you keep Nazi hidden, Monsieur Axel? You have not told me.
Poet, you ask too many questions. Nazi is nothing to you. But if you wish to ask her questions, I give you my permission.
Merci bien. Where is she, monsieur?
You are a sorcerer. See if you can find her.
Ah, then you will permit me to...
Enough. Go away, Fouad. I allow myself a joke, that is all.
Mais, monsieur...
Go away. Do not come again unless I send for you.
Pardon, monsieur. I will say no more of Nazir. It was only a jest, as you say. Huh? I can do nothing about Monsieur Rizon until you tell me how to find him when I have gone to Algiers.
Tomorrow I will give you the directions and the map. Now I am busy. Go away.
As you wish, monsieur.
I will speak to Abdallah. Abdallah, come here.
That's about all, Dot. I couldn't go any further with it without making Roxor suspicious. I wish Abdallah had come back.
Poor Najee.
Well, I don't see how he got her up there in the first place, unless Abdallah double-crossed her.
I know it wasn't that.
Oh, Betty.
Abdallah was right there with Roxor when I left, but I couldn't speak to him alone. Roxor may suspect him as it is.
Oh, I hope not.
I'm afraid Najee went with Roxor purposely. To keep him from finding out Abdallah's on our side now.
Oh, if he does find out.
Yes. If Roxor begins to ask questions about where Abdallah got the sorcerer Fouad, for instance.
Say, that's right.
Oh, why did all this have to happen now? When we're so close to finding Robert.
And we are close, Dot. Roxor said he'd give me complete directions tomorrow. And even a map to the place.
Well, I bet Abdallah won't give you away, Uncle Frank.
I know he won't. If he can help it.
Oh, I can't bear to think of Robert in some underground hole somewhere. Knowing everyone must have given him up years ago.
Oh, Mother, darling.
Ill, maybe. Helpless. His mind may even...
Dorothy, listen. He won't be strong physically.
Oh, Frank.
How could he be? Shut up for 9 years. But he must be the same mentally. Don't forget that. He's held Roxor off about that formula all this time.
Gosh, it's like the things you read about people in concentration camps.
Oh, Bob, don't.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mom.
I'll have to have a showdown with Roxor. And if anything happens to me, Dot...
Oh, no, Frank. Please wait until Abdallah comes.
Well, he may not be able to get away, Dot. If I don't come back, you go to Algiers and send word to... I'll write his name down for you. Where's my pen? Now, tell this man about Robert. Everything. He knows Algiers well. And he's a member of the Secret Order, besides. He'll do everything he can. And that's a lot. Here you are.
I feel as if I were sending you to your death.
Dorothy, just remember this. Even if Robert had nothing to do with it, I'd still have to fight Roxor. You don't understand, I know, but believe it just the same.
Effendi.
Yes, Abu. What is it?
A letter. The messenger would not wait.
No, thanks. It's all right.
Effendi, the princess, you have found her?
Yes, I think she'll be home pretty soon, Abu.
Great is Allah.
Why, it's written in Arabic.
It's from Abdallah.
Oh?
Let's see. I dare not come to you now. Roxor is not to send the princess to Algiers... but to kill her before he goes from Egypt.
Kill her?
Tonight you will be taken to the Nile.
Oh, hey, aren't you going to read the rest of it?
I've read all I need to. Remember what I said, Dot.
Fouad, I said you were not to come here again until I send for you.
Monsieur Roxor, I have learned that Nazi is even now practicing her sorcery upon you.
What is this?
Nazi is working her sorcery.
No matter. In 1 hour it will be too late.
Oui. I know how you plan to have her killed tonight, but I...
How do you know what I plan?
You do not forget I have much knowledge of the black arts.
I would be glad to forget it and you.
But Monsieur knows the value of a sorcerer. Nazi knows many secrets. For example, she knows much about the work of Chandu.
No, I have lost patience with such people. Regent is one.
We can learn not his secrets, monsieur.
No, I say. You will bring me Regent's secret. That is all I want from you.
Non, I am desolé that monsieur thinks so little of my powers.
I know what you can do, but...
Simple. If you learn not one thing, you still have the dark iron.
You are right. In Saba, bring Nadji to me.
Ah, monsieur, you are most fortunate that Bin Saba cannot speak.
I told you he is one who once spoke too much.
Monsieur is very strong and without feelings.
When you see Robert Regent, you will see a man who, for feelings, as you call it, has suffered for 9 years.
Vraiment, monsieur?
Feelings of pity for the people of the world. Cattle. Why, he could have shared with me power.
So?
But he would not. For this, when he has told you his secret, he will die. This is what comes of permitting yourself feelings. Good evening, Nachi.
I am growing weary of this small room with no air, Luxor.
You need not go back to it. Why don't you speak to Fuad? He tells me he knows you quite well.
Perhaps I can induce her to speak to me. Nazi, how do you like it that I twist your arm behind you?
Try out. It's our only chance. Make more noise.
No, Roxor. Do not allow this torture. No.
You see at last what it means to oppose Roxor. Ask her the questions, Fuad.
Oui, monsieur.
Ask her the names of the men of Chandler's secret order.
I will tell you nothing.
Make her speak before I take her to the Nile. I've wasted too much time already.
The Nile? Roxor, you will not drown me.
Why not, since you know so much and refuse to help me?
Not the river. Oh, Roxor, I beg you.
Nazi, you shall not die before you have seen that I, Fuad, am as great a sorcerer as you yourself. Is it not so, Monsieur Roxor?
Oh, no matter. I am tired of this. Abdallah will be ready soon and we will go.
Surely Monsieur Roxor is not going himself. Such work can be done by servants.
I will go myself. I will see that it is done. In Saba, send Abdallah to me when he comes.
She will tell me the secrets, monsieur, when I have performed the magic. Nazi, you see? I wave my hands in small circles, like this.
Ah, you are a dancing bear, Fuad.
Uh-huh. You see what occurs? Look in the corner. Voila. A wisp of smoke. In this corner, more smoke. From under the divan, smoke. Soon it will fill the room.
Fuad, that is one of my own secrets.
So. Fuad, you do well. Ask her the questions.
I am here, Luxor.
Good. Is the boat ready, Abdallah?
It is so, Luxor. Men have spent the hour making it full of holes. When it has reached the deepness of the Nile, it will sink.
But wait, you have them?
From a ruin near Naji's own home, I have taken great stones.
Oh, no, Roxor. Do not permit this. Roxor!
But what is this smoke?
Oh, Roxor!
The house is burning.
It is a trick of Fuad to force the princess to speak. Princess of the bottom of the Nile.
Oh, no, Roxor!
Even a sorceress cannot escape drowning in a leaking boat with a stone about her neck.
Oh, please.
Stop the smoke, Fuad.
Why should I, monsieur? The princess has not yet agreed to speak.
But it is choking us. Stop it, Chandu.
Chandu?
Oh, Allah.
Where did you call Chandu? By the ruin of the world, Fuad, if you have brought Chandler
what
here.
What have I done?
Fuad! It is you! You are Chandler himself!
Quick, Abdallah, the cord from your turban.
Come here! Bring all the men! Kill this fool who calls himself Fuad! Abdallah, you shall die!
Not by your hand, Roxor!
Hassan! Mustafa!
Come on, Abdallah. Let's tie him in the chair. Well, thank heaven for the smoke.
I will cut out your heart, Chandler.
Let the number
Hassan, kill them! Kill them both!
Stand beside me, Abdallah.
I want Chandu.
Chandu, behind you, the knife!
No, son of a camel!
Oh. Renegade dog!
Oh, Chandu, they have stabbed Abdallah.
Nabi, keep away!
They smoke!
Kill Chandu! There he is!
Here's the door, Nabi. Quick, down the stairs to the alley.
I will not go without you, Chunky.
Go on, go on. I'll bring Abdallah.
Leave me, Chunky.
Don't talk, Abdallah.
Take you, Lou.
I'll carry you. Go ahead, Mudgy.
I'm gonna kill the dog.
They're cutting each other's throats in there. The smoke's so thick they don't even know we've gone.
Do listen to me.
We'll have you back in Nazis in no time.
No, Chandu, it's not all of your magic.
What? What then?
When we were tying Roxor in a chair, Chandu, I lighted fire. He will burn.
To suggest that you and every member of your family join us every weekday night to hear Chandu the Magician. And we suggest that you try the soap we make, White King Granulated Soap. You will discover that there is no better soap for your washing machine than White King. White King makes plenty of good, rich, foaming soap suds. Long-lasting suds that don't fizzle out on you when your wash water cools down. And White King suds really roll the dirt right out of your clothes. You'll be so proud of your washing. The white things, so very white. The colored things, kept so fresh and bright. The washing time shortens so considerably, it saves you effort and saves wear on your clothes as well. So may we remind you, nothing washes like soap. And there is no soap like White King. You'll love White King. And when you buy a box, be sure to save the box top, won't you? Chandu the Magician is produced and directed by Cyril Armbruster. The makers of White King invite you to listen tomorrow at this time when the story resumes. Chandu the Magician.
Well, that's Chapter 43 of The Search for Robert Regent. And that means it's time to say tune in again, same time, same station, for another journey into radio's past. This is Yesterday's Radio, and I'm your host, Don Astin, saying, until next time.